You won't have an idea who that was. I'm going to have to tell you. That was MZ, the owner of our affiliate in Santa Cruz, California, KSCO, great station, doing the Monster Mash. Now, we had an event this past summer in Santa Cruz. Had a great event. It was an affiliate get together with listeners out there. And it was packed. And we had a barbecue on the back porch of the station and everything. And we did karaoke time. So we were all up there having a good time singing. MZ sang Monster Mash and did it very well. You just heard him. I mean, that was just amazing. So good job, MZ. Good job. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM and take more of your ghost to ghost calls. Well, that probably scared the living daylights out of some of you. Oh, it did me. That kind of jarred me. I'm sitting back thinking of this story I'm going to tell you, and I hear that. Wow. A lot of times we've had these great calls during ghost to ghost times over the years. There was another one where a police officer called us, and he said, "We were called to a house of an apparent heart attack victim." And so we got to the house, we knocked on the door, A little old man opened the door for us. He lets us in, and in we go, and we see somebody lying down, face down on the floor. We roll the person over, he's dead. It's the little old man who let us in. Unbelievable story. I just love him. I really do. So anyways, we've also got a special topic line, and that is, have you looked at death in the face? What did it look like? That is 818-817-0021. Let's pick it up by going to Rock Hill, South Carolina. Our friend Barry is there. Hello, Barry.
Hello, George. Once again, what a great pleasure it is, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
Just talking to our best friend Tommy Danheiser. I hadn't told him yet, George, but I think I'm going to move on out of California and move in with him. I hadn't told him yet, so don't tell him
I won't
until
tell
I
him.
tell
I won't tell him, but that'll get him to move to South Carolina if you move to California. Trust me.
You're exactly right. George, listen to this story. I told Tommy I've been waiting just for the right time to call. This is a ghostly, paranormal type story. All right, let's run the clock way back 63 years. This was 1952. I was 9 years old. I was in the third grade. And I had a little bit of English trouble in third grade. And my third grade English teacher, I was living in a little town called Lake Waccamaw, North Carolina.
Okay.
Anyway, she said, "All right, I want to tutor you a little bit this summer on English." So sure enough, I would go to her house twice a week. I'm 9 years old, and she's my third grade teacher. And so anyway, we're there. She's got a parlor with a glassed-in porch. Well, George, we were out on that porch, and she was helping me, and I happened to look up, and she had a wind chime, a glass wind chime. It was put together with monofilament line, like fishing line.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we were looking at that thing, and all of a sudden I said, Miss Lovelace was her name. I said, "Miss Lovelace, that thing is getting ready to fall." And she said, "What?" I said, "I don't know. I've got something." I said, "It's getting ready to fall down." And I told you, it wasn't 6 or 7 seconds went by, and that thing fell to the ground.
Ooh, you felt it.
I felt it somehow. I don't know. I have no idea how it came along, but here comes the strange part. Now, we look at that. We go over to it, and it's broken, in pieces with glass. And I looked at a loop. The monofilament line had a loop on the end of it, and it was over one of those teacups, that you screw up in underneath a shelf and hang teacups from it. And the loop was not broken, and we were just flabbergasted or whatever, and then sure enough, I moved out of town. Well, 15 years later, George, I was 23 years old, I was getting ready to go to the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, which is right close to Lake Waccamaw. And I was headed down there, and I said, I'm going to swing through Lake Waccamaw and see if Miss Lovelace is still alive. And sure enough, I knocked on the door, and there she was, and she gave me a great big bear hug. She was a big old buxom lady. I squashed in between there. But anyway, honest to God, George, we go into that den, and we're sitting there, and she's got another wind chime hanging from that same hook. Right there where the first one was hanging. And I said, hey, you remember that time that doggone wind chime fell? She said, Bear, I thought about it 1,000 times. She said, there's just no way possible that thing could have happened. And George, I want you to know, I looked at that thing and something hit me. I said, God, Miss Lovelace, that thing's getting ready to fall. It's getting ready to fall again.
No way.
Oh, Barry, cut that out. And George, it wasn't 10 seconds.
Has that happened to you ever since?
No. And here's the strange part. This one, George, was put together with like sewing string. And it had been hanging from that same little hook for 15 years that I was gone. And it had worn through. In other words, when we checked the loop, had worn through, you know, from the rust on the little coffee hook.
Well, sometimes you get that power, you know.
Oh, I don't know what it was, George, and I've wondered hundreds of times, and especially since I've been listening to your show, I had forgotten about it for 30 years, and then I thought about it about 2 or 3 years ago, and I said, well, I'm going to wait till the right time and tell George that story.
You got it. Barry, hey, thanks.
Isn't that crazy?
It sure is. Enjoy your Halloween. Let's go to our wild card line. Alex is with us in Topeka, Kansas. Hey, Alex, good morning.
George, how are you tonight?
I'm great, and thanks for holding so long. I do appreciate it. You hung in there.
I've got a story I've been sitting on for about 3 years now. I've been waiting for a spot in on Ghost to Ghost to tell it.
Have
you ever heard of the albino woman from Topeka?
I have not. I've heard of albinos, of course, but I haven't heard of the albino woman of Topeka. What is this?
Well, let me go ahead and start by saying that about 3 years ago, I had a little group of friends. And one day we just decided, you know what, we're tired of hanging out at different places. Let's just go to the cemeteries on Friday night and see what happens. And so this one particular night, we go up to Rochester Cemetery here in Topeka. It was probably about 10:30 at night. I've got me, my friend Adam, and we have two young ladies with us as well. They wanted to come along. And we pull up to the cemetery, and the way that the cemetery sits, it's like the gate is on the side of the road, and there's a little ramp you have to drive up into to get into the cemetery. Of course, the cemetery was closed. We weren't supposed to be there, but when you're out on a Friday night with a bunch of friends, you don't really care about that sort of thing. But I parked the car facing the gate because I couldn't just park in the middle of the road. I had to park on the little ramp. And me and my friend Adam got out of the car, and the two young ladies elected to stay behind.
Smart.
They just took one look, and they're like, nope, we're not doing it. Nope. Now, Adam and I had been in this cemetery once or twice before, and, you know, nothing had happened. Things were fine. And so we went in there, same thing we usually do. We just walked down the central road leading into the cemetery, past the gate. And we didn't make it about 250 or 300 feet before Adam's phone starts just going off. And he's getting a bunch of text messages from the girls in the car. And the text messages are saying, help, come back,
uh-oh,
back here.
And at first you think they're playing around, right?
Yeah. And so we decide to double back, and we see the ramp I was talking about. Like, there's the top of just this small hill before you get into the cemetery proper. And at the very lip of that hill, we just see this little haze. It's like white figure haze. The thing is, that haze was between us and the car. So we had to go past it or go through it. Adam and I looked at each other and said, you know what, let's just go. let's just get to the car, see what they need, see what they want.
And get out of here.
And we walked closer and closer to it, and again, the haze, the white haze got brighter and brighter. And this was a moonless night.
Yeah.
There was no light out there. And like I said, the haze got brighter and brighter. And as we got closer to it, it got colder and colder. And we started seeing the fog from our breath. And we finally got in the car, and the girls are just freaking out. They're screaming. They're
they want yelling, out of there fast, don't they?
To get into the car.
Yeah.
So Adam and I get in the car. We're, of course, spooked because we see that figure just, you know, standing there. And I took a good look at it once I got in the driver's seat, and I noticed that it looked like, you know, a person. It was a figure. And the thing is, the way I parked, I was facing the figure the whole time. So I had to, in order to get out of there, I had to back out and then just take off down the road. But I had to stare at that figure while I was starting the car. And that just freaked me out as well because, you know, this was something I was seeing that was there. So I put my key in the car. I turned the key.
Are you nervous when that's happening?
Oh, I was pretty nervous, but I think it was more of a group thing where everyone's freaking out. So you're like, okay,
right.
I'm kind of freaking out too.
And your adrenaline's kicked in and everything else.
So I put the key in the car. I turned the key, and the car started fine. So I go ahead, pull in the reverse again. I'm still staring at the scene. It just starts moving back and forth like it's telling us to go away or it's taunting us or whatnot. And I finally reverse my car enough to be able to turn around and we get out of there. So about a day later, we're just sitting together talking about what happened. And we found out that, you know, there's this local legend about this albino lady who had apparently... some time ago, she lived near this cemetery. Some legends say she was a caretaker. Some legends say that she lived near there.
Huh.
I'm not sure what's true. But she had been tormented and taunted all of her life. She grew up alone.
Whoa.
Because she was albino. And she grew up during the 1930s, 1940s, you know, during that time period. And people...
She was different, and they attacked her.
Mm-hmm. And she apparently had died alone, and ever since,
jeez,
she's apparently been wandering that cemetery.
She's getting her last moments, isn't she? Mm-hmm. I love that story. Alex, thanks. Let's go to our Look at Death line. Jennifer's with us in Santa Barbara, California. Hi, Jennifer. What happened?
Hi, George. First of all, let me tell you, I'm going to have to sleep with my lights on tonight. This is the scariest show ever.
I may have to, too.
Okay, so I was standing next to death. Recently.
Standing next to death?
I was standing next to death. Okay. I do Reiki, and I'm not sure if you know much about Reiki.
I know what Reiki is. Sure. A lot. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm a massage therapist, and I've been doing Reiki for about 10 years, and I never had an experience like the one I had a couple of weeks ago. I had a couple of clients that were married to each other, and they were very close, and it was obvious that they were very in love, and about 7 or 8 months ago, he died of a heart attack. He was a young guy, and he was a cyclist, and he had had a heart attack previous, but no one knew, and he had some scar tissue in his heart, and one morning he woke up, and he had, you know, died in their living room.
That's sad.
Yeah, it was sad. So anyway, you know, I went to the funeral and, you know, felt a little mourning for them, but she recently came to me to get body work, and, while I was working on her, I decided to call in Reiki, and I invited, you know, Jesus, and I invited Keith, who had passed away. And Sylvia is a very devoted Christian and Baptist person, and I didn't know if she'd be open to me telling her this story, so I didn't tell her. But when I called him in, within a few minutes, I felt warmth very close to my body.
Mm-hmm.
Never felt this before. I felt like he was standing in the room next to me. Okay, so I just continued on with my massage, and the next thing I know, I started crying. Tears were coming down my eyes.
Why? Head. Why?
I was channeling his energy, and, you know, I just assumed that her husband, Keith, had moved on and, you know, gone into heaven in a past life, but apparently his spirit is standing right next to her, and he's in a lot of mourning about leaving her.
He didn't have closure, did he?
He didn't have closure, or she didn't, you know, and I didn't expect him to be right next to her physically. But once I invited the energy in, he was there and he was crying and he was sobbing. And I had to stop the Reiki session and step away and, you know, close the Reiki session. And when she got up and walked out of my office, we talked a little more, and she told me that she journals him every day for long periods of time. So possibly, you know, maybe that's what's keeping him in the physical world.
Yeah.
But he's definitely right there, right next to her, and it's the saddest thing ever.
That is sad. And you had death right next to you. You're right.
I had it right next to me, but it was a love death. It wasn't a scary.
Yeah.
Scary death.
That's
so
a good one.
I just wanted to share that.
I think we're going to get a few scary ones too. Tom, you've got another one of our ghost to ghost texts. What do you got for
we
us?
We do, but I got to ask you first. How could you put a bowl of candy and not expect it to be gone?
Well, I guess what I meant by that is I don't think it was 45 kids in the neighborhood who took one or two apiece. I think it was one kid who took the whole thing.
Oh, I agree.
That's what's upsetting. I mean probably straight from the get-go.
But why would you think that wouldn't happen?
Well, because I trust people. That's why.
Yeah, but it's candy and kids.
Well, still, you take a couple. I mean, my gosh, that kid's going to grow up. assuming that's what happened, that kid's going to grow up greedy, putting himself first, and, you know, that's not what you're supposed to do.
And he's going to go to the Norrie household every Halloween.
Yeah, he's probably looking for it.
So this is from Connie in Massachusetts. I live alone in a big mansion-type house, and the other night I heard a strange noise. George, I can't believe it, but when I went downstairs, I found blood on my kitchen counter.
Oh.
I am so freaked out. How could this be?
Well, anything could have happened. Somebody was in the house, cut, sore, and then ran out and left. You better check your windows and doors. Could have been something else. Could have been a rat that ate another animal and was bleeding. Could have been that. Could be something from the spirit world that you've conjured up. Could have been that.
That would just flip me out if it found blood.
Unbelievable. That's scary.
Yeah.
That's a scary text, Tom. Jeez.
I know.
I mean, unbelievable. What are you doing on Halloween night, though, Thomas?
I think I might truck on down to the Queen Mary, the haunted.
Are you going to get dressed
Mary.
Up at all?
No.
I am going to dress up as Morgus. I've got this somewhat Morgus outfit with a lab coat, and I have a baby, an alien baby that I haul out every Halloween, who is in a movie. I can't remember the name of the movie in Halloween. And so when people look at it from the back, they see this baby, cute little baby head, and they come up to you, and, you know, here's this guy holding a baby. How sweet. And then it's like a hand puppet baby. You can put your whole arm in it. And then you turn the head around and you look at it, and it's just horrendous.
And I wonder why you would leave a bowl of candy out.
You know, it's horrendous. I used to have fun during Halloween.
Take pictures, would you? I want to see that.
I'll take a picture of the baby and send it to who's working tomorrow night. The Sean is. I'll
make sure it gets up.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to come back. More ghost-to-ghost lines. And don't forget, we're going to do it again next hour as well, right here for you on Ghost to Ghost AM worldwide. Yes, indeed. Hey, we all remember our time, though, doing our little trick-or-treating. And I will always remember Mrs. Chasteen. People thought she was a witch when she wasn't in costume. And she was even more of an evil person on Halloween. I mentioned a little bit of this story some time ago, but she was the one, every time we would play baseball out in the street, and the ball would roll over onto her grass, she'd run out of her house and grab the ball and keep it. Didn't want anybody walking on her grass. I mean, she was just, there was something wrong with her. But during the Halloween times, people reluctantly went up to her porch and her door, you know, trick or treat, and because you never knew what you were going to get with her. I think one year she gave us apples. The next year, not much. But she was just an evil, evil person. Lived by herself, and I always remember that. why she just couldn't be happy. And there's lots of people like that. So I hope you have an enjoyable Halloween. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Frank in Janesville, Wisconsin. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
Nice to talk to you, sir.
You too, and thank you for holding. Well over an hour. That, my friend, is devotion.
That's okay. I made sure I had a full battery. Yeah, so anyway, my story starts in, it was 1985. It was quite a while ago. And I was driving back from Los Angeles, and I had started out early in the morning, and I made it to northwestern New Mexico the next evening.
And, just kept going, huh?
Yeah. And I stopped at a motel, and there was a restaurant across the all-night restaurant right across the street, and it's like 10, 11 o'clock at night, something like that. So anyway, I before I went to eat, I called home and I talked to my wife and to find out how my mother was. She had been they were testing her for several different things. They didn't know exactly what was wrong with her. And my wife said, yeah, she said they found out she has terminal liver cancer, and it's all through her body.
Oh,
there's
my God.
We can do about it.
Ugh.
So anyway, I hung up the phone. I go across the street, and I start to eat some food, and I started bawling like a baby, and I threw a $20 bill on the table, and I walked out the door and went back to the hotel room, and I happened to be a recovering alcoholic, and at that time I was about 7 or 8 years sober. And
which is very good, by the way. Good for you.
Well, today I'm almost 38 years sober. You stick with it.
Yep.
You make it, you know. So anyway, I was about ready to buy a bottle. I was going to lose it, and
yeah, it's tough.
I started cussing out my creator, and he had every right to just kick my ass, you know.
Open a cloud and just bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
But you know what, though, a lot of people, Frank, feel that way when something tragic, like, why, God, why are you doing this to us?
I don't know. We lose it. We lose it. So anyway, I cried myself to sleep. Around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I think it was like 2:30 or something like that, there was a clock that I could look at that was over on the other side of the motel room. And somebody shouted my name. And, of course, I woke up, and I rolled over, and you know what an obelisk is, of course.
Yes.
There's a miniature obelisk at the foot of the bed, and it's as bright as the sun. And I'm listening for something to happen, and nothing happens. But out of the corner of my right eye, I can see an iridescent green winged creature. And I didn't pay much attention to that because the light was so bright. So I sat there for like 15 to 20 minutes, and I couldn't stand it anymore. And I got on my knees, and I went forward towards this light, and I wanted to see what would happen. Now, this is pretty gutsy.
Yeah, it was. Now, were you being spiritual here at all, or you were just...
I don't know, but I was going to touch it and see what was going to happen. And when I got about 5-6 inches away from this thing, it disappeared.
Poof. Boom. Just like that.
Just like that. And I look around the room, and of course, now it's dark in there, you know. And now I'm really scared. I wasn't afraid when the light was there. But when the light was gone, and this figure was gone, the fear set in. And I thought to myself, I'm out of here. And I get in my car, and I drive down the road. And the next night, I make it to St. Louis. All the time during my trip to St. Louis, I'm constantly thinking to myself, what was in the room? What was in the room? I couldn't believe what I saw. You know, I think, was I dreaming? You know, no, I wasn't dreaming. So anyway, I get into St. Louis, and you could probably even tell me where I was, but I took the wrong turn off of a freeway, and I ended up on a boulevard in downtown St. Louis, or I couldn't see any houses or anything.
Right.
But it was a boulevard. There was grass and trees separating a four-lane highway.
Could you see the arch at all?
No, I couldn't. I don't even know if where the arch would be in reference to where I was at.
Okay.
But anyway, I figured if I just keep driving, eventually I'm going to find something that'll tell me where I'm at. So I drive and drive and drive. All of a sudden, I see a sign that says, to Interstate 55.
I know where you were. Exactly. Okay. Where you were.
Now, I come up on the road from the left, opposite of what we normally enter. Do you know where I was at then?
Yep.
Okay.
You were getting close to Illinois, by the way.
Yes, very close. As I come up on the interstate, it's real bright orange and red, and I look behind me over my right shoulder, and there's absolute mayhem. It's chaos. There's fire trucks and police cars, and there's trucks overturned, and there's a great big fire going on.
Jeez.
And I went about 2 miles down the road, and I thought to myself, God, I will never doubt you again.
You could have been in that mess, Frank.
Absolutely. So listen to this now. I get home, and my family always got together on the 4th of July. And it was my turn to have the party.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was going to come to our place. My mother... I don't even know why they brought her out there. I guess because she wanted to come, you know.
This was the one fighting the liver cancer.
She's fighting cancer.
Yeah.
You know? And she got out of the car and she started to walk. And the entrances to my house, the concrete walks were slanted. They weren't steps. They were slanted up to where it leveled off, and then you went into the house.
Okay.
Anyway, she started to cry, and she almost fell, and we put her in the car, and she's got to go back home. That's it.
Yeah.
So my brother and I were in the kitchen alone, and I said to him, Dick, I said, you and I think a lot alike, and I said, you know, the good Lord told us that wherever two or more are gathered in my name, I will be in their midst. And I'm going to grab the promise that he's in our midst, and I'm going to pray that she doesn't have any pain. We know she's going to die.
Yeah.
She's 83 years old.
And probably soon after you saw her again that time.
Yes. And so anyway, they put her in the car, and they take her back to their house, which was a few miles away. And that October, we got a call, or 1st of October, we got a call that we better get to the hospital because it's pretty quick.
I hate those calls. I hate those calls.
Yeah, I know it. My brother's in Los Angeles. My sister's in northern Mississippi. And we all got there at about within an hour or two of one another to get to the hospital. And my brother had a standing order with, I don't know if it was American Airlines or United or who it was.
Yeah, he was ready.
All he had to do was call him and tell him, hey, I got to go.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so anyway, we're in the hospital room. And, takes a little breath once in a while, and the beeper is going beep, 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 and we knew she was going, you know, and I bent down towards her ear, and I whispered in her ear, "Mommy, it's Frank. Go to Jesus. He's in the light. Mm-hmm. Go to the Lord. He wants you to come home." And the light, or that beeping, went beep.
Just like that.
Just like that. That light that I saw in that motel room, George, God was telling me something. That was the doorway to heaven. He was trying to let me know that's where your mother's going.
That's right.
You got it all taken care
of. That's right.
It's covered. Don't worry about it.
That's how those signs work, Frank. Thank you for that. It's an interesting Halloween story. It was one of the pleasant ones in terms of what happened for you. Indeed. Tom, you've got a text for us. Let's get it out. What do you got?
This is from Daniel in Texas. Thank you for Ghost to Ghost. It seems to me that out of all the holidays, people just love the creepiness of Halloween. Why do you think that is?
People like to be scared. I like Halloween because it's the beginning of the festive season. I mean, as you know, we're going to be live on Thanksgiving night and on Thanksgiving Day, and then we're going to be live on Christmas Eve and Christmas night and New Year's Eve and New Year's night. We do that because we want to be part of you. We're all family here listening to the program. But during Halloween, people like to be creeped out, and that's what we're going to do. I bet when you're driving home tonight, Tommy, look in your rear view mirror at the eyes that will be looking at you. Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach. Michael, take it away.
Hi, George.
Hi,
I called to tell you about the first Halloween, and we can document it scientifically and exactly right to the minute.
What happened? When was this?
It was 1900. And 87 years ago, this coming spring, and it occurred on the Smita. And this information comes from the late Glenn Kimball, Jr., author of The Politics of the Crucifixion.
And I miss him.
We all do.
Great guest.
We all do. And listen, you got to get his children on this show to carry on his tradition.
Are they doing anything?
They will if you contact them, George. Here's the deal, George. The 27th chapter of Matthew, starting at verse 50, I want you to have Tom read those six verses. It's the origin of the zombie tales. Remember when Lazarus was resurrected?
That's right.
Jesus said, you know, untie him. He had all those grave clothes wrapped around him. He looked like a mummy. That was the first zombie in history. And what Glenn Kimball tells us from secular history is that Rome, the emperor, ordered the sealing of all the tombs of Rome because the dead, on the very day that Jesus died, the dead were coming out of tombs, and the city was terrified.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine living in those days, Michael? Creepy, creepy. Creepy. Let's go to Greg in Burbank. Hey, Greg, we've got some time here for you. I hope. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I could give you one or two quick ones here.
Give me one quick one. Go ahead.
Okay. My mother was born with one of those veils that they say
those
people are a little more receptive.
That's right.
Psychically receptive. And one of the occurrences that happened, at least I was there when it happened, because a lot of the other stories that happened in our family, I had to verify through other relatives. So she was washing some Pyrex little dessert cups.
Yeah.
They're rather thick. We had pudding that evening. I was about 14, and so as she's putting them in to just rinse them, wash them with the wash rag, I hear her go, "Oh, my, And I looked up. I said, what's the matter? You're not in the middle of doing anything there. She says, look. And she pulled out the very last Pyrex dish, and it had a shape of a heart in the very bottom of it, the thickness of that glass. And I took it the next day to a school I was going to that was a Catholic high school.
Right.
And I showed it to the priest there, and he says, oh, well, you see, the bottom of the glass might have had this weakness in it, and it fell out.
The priest said that, huh?
Yeah.
You would have thought he would have looked at it as something enlightening.
Well, I asked him, how does this happen when it was just a basic base in there? and so I asked my mom, I said, you know, well, what was the O about? She says, well, I was thinking of my father who recently passed away. So that translated into the
heart.
Shape of the heart.
That's the tie-in indeed. We've still got another hour to go of Ghost to Ghost for you. Those of you on hold, just hang there. We'll be right back.